Words like styles of clothing or decor go out of fashion. Terms that were used on an everyday basis, understood by most, if not all, today just get you blank stares. I'm beginning to think one of those words in our culture is sin. It doesn't seem like anything gets called sin anymore. But certainly one of those terms is the word covet. When's the last time you heard covet or covetousness or coveting being used in a normal sentence in everyday conversation? I can't remember the last time I heard it. And yet, it is the focus of the last of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20:17, you shall not covet. Now, coveting is a word we don't use much, but the concept of wanting what's not ours is well known. In fact, the content of the Tenth Commandment addresses is so familiar, it's expressed in a lot of popular sayings today, such as, the biggest room in the world is the room for improvement. Or, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, right? People live in one of two tents, content and discontent. And our yearnings will always exceed our earnings. You ever felt that one? Now, whether it's desserts or clothes or houses or salaries or lifestyles, cars, we want what we don't have. We often want what other people have. Now, we all have unique desires. We want different things. We have different tastes and priorities. I mean, it'd be a boring world if we all liked the same thing. But while our desires may be different, we do have something in common. We all want what we don't have. I was reminded of a song this past week that was produced many years ago, and the chorus went something like this: when you've got more than you need, but less than you want, it's going to drive you to your knees. You've got more than you need, but less than you want. I guess there's just no satisfying greed. And that is the key to understanding the Tenth Commandment. You see, greed, coveting is the verb form of greed. It's that wanting more, wanting new, wanting what somebody else has. That is really what God is talking about here. The Greek word for covetousness in the Bible literally means an inordinate desire for getting. It's what it's all about. It's about acquiring. It's about possessing, amassing, collecting. And I've always got to have more. I've always got to have newer and better and different. And in the Tenth Commandment, it's especially true of what one does not have, but somebody else does. It becomes very personal at times. And that desire to have what they want can lead to other sins against them personally, as we will see. In times of want, we crave what someone else has. In times of plenty, we are actually impoverished by the inability to be satisfied with what we have. And both of these vices are violations of the Tenth Commandment. Covetousness is a hidden thing. It's not something that you can see on the outside. It deals within. It's our thoughts, our feelings, our desires, our wants. Oftentimes, it is seen in our culture as a good thing. We may redefine it as ambition. Now, technically, there's nothing wrong with ambition, but it can be corrupted into what the Bible calls materialism. And I think you really see this blatantly in a film produced a number of years ago called Wall Street. Michael Douglas was one of the stars. He portrayed a fellow named Gordon Gekko, who was a corporate raider. And he was addressing a group of shareholders. And he said, "The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed in all its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, for knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind. And greed, you mark my words, will not only save this company, but that other malfunctioning corporation called the USA." Now, maybe that's true on Wall Street, or maybe that's just true in Hollywood's version of Wall Street. But greed being good? Sure, it may grease the wheels of our capitalist, consumerism-driven economy, but in God's eyes, greed is not good. In fact, when you go through Scripture, some of the darker pages of human history have resulted from covetousness. Consider, Lucifer coveted the throne of God and was cast out of heaven and became Satan. Lot coveted the easy riches of Sodom and ended up losing everything he had. Achan coveted silver and other valuables, and swift judgment overtook him and his entire family. David coveted Uriah's wife, and he became an adulterer and a murderer. Judas coveted money and power and ended up betraying his Lord and then committed suicide. Ananias and Sapphira coveted popularity in the church at half price, you might say. They lied and died right there at the church. No, greed is not good. The 10th commandment speaks out against the green-eyed monster of greed. And we're going to see why as we examine what God's Word has to say on the subject. We begin with the problem of greed. The word used in Exodus 20:17 means to desire earnestly, to long after. In and of itself, it's a neutral word. In a parallel passage in Deuteronomy 5:21, another Hebrew word is used to set one's desire on something. It's almost a fixation where I have to have it. It's consuming. Now, at this point, it's still only a desire. It's something that's just inside, but it leads to other things. And you notice that this commandment does not deal with an outward action. It is an inward thought. It's an inward desire. And what it shows is that you can break God's commandments without doing anything outwardly. Jesus taught this in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. To break them inwardly is just as bad as breaking them outwardly. And this particular commandment goes right to the heart of the problem. Now, it would be absurd, in fact, it would be impossible, to try to legislate against coveting. I mean, no policeman could arrest somebody for greed. No prosecuting attorney could bring enough evidence for conviction on something that's only within someone's mind and heart. And yet God says, man looks at the outward appearance, but I look on the heart. And I will hold you accountable. We see this is the attitude. Really, coveting is to theft what anger is to murder and what lust is to adultery. It's that desire that begins the process. All sin begins in the mind. It all starts with a thought. Now, if we resist the thought, it may not come out in our actions, but if we cultivate that thought, it will eventually come out in what we say and in what we do. This 10th commandment, like the first, deals with what's in the heart. Most of the other eight deal with what's on the outside. But you find that covetous people end up breaking a lot of those other commandments. Like we saw with David. David wanted another man's wife. And what happened? In one sense, he stole her. Thou shalt not steal. Committed adultery with her. And murdered her husband to cover it up. Right? There's three more commands that all had its root in this 10th commandment. As I had said, the original word was neutral. It's neither right nor wrong. We are created with certain desires. It's when it's misdirected that it becomes wrong. In fact, one of the key elements of this verse is not just the word covet, but I want you to notice as I read the entire verse, the emphasis that is repeated. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his manservant or maidservant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Did you catch that repeated phrase? Your neighbor, his. It's directed at a person. It's what somebody else has. Now, there's nothing wrong with desiring a wife. There's nothing wrong with desiring a house. Or an ox or a donkey if you're into those kinds of things. There's nothing wrong with that, okay? It's that the desire's not wrong. It's when I want what somebody else has. He has it and I should. Then it becomes personal. And you see this time and time again. You saw it with David and Uriah. You think Ahab, he wanted that vineyard of Naboth's. And he offered Naboth to buy it. Naboth said, well, this has been in my family for generations. I can't just sell it. But that wasn't good enough. Ahab had to have that. So they trumped up false charges. There's the 9th commandment. They had an innocent man put to death. There's the commandment against murder. And they took what wasn't rightfully his, and that's stealing. You see how many of the other commandments find their roots here. And this is really the problem of greed. It sprouts in many different ways. Greed is an excessive, inordinate desire. It may be for wealth. It might be for fame. Some greed for power, for status, for a life of ease. Some people don't even know what they want. They just want. And they keep going and they keep getting, trying to satisfy an inner itch that just can't be. And so they have to get more and more and more. These are the ones who tear down their barns to build bigger ones. These are the ones who will run over anybody that gets in their way. They will use any means possible, whether it's right or wrong, whether it's legitimate or illegitimate. I got to have it, and I don't care what I have to do to get it. I'm going to get it. That's greed. That's what this 10th commandment is all about. It's that desire within. Greed can transform the human personality. It is capable of turning human beings into absolute beasts to get what we want. If you don't believe that, look at video, because I wouldn't suggest watching it in person. Black Friday, right? People running over each other to get that item that's on sale. It's greed, plain and simple. And the problem with greed is that it never satisfies. In Ecclesiastes 5, beginning in verse 10, it says, whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them? Kind of sounds like that song I mentioned earlier, doesn't it? We have more than we need. In fact, many of us have more than we know what to do with. But we still want more. Still got to have more. Still got to, fill up one container. Got to start a new one. And the Bible calls it greed. It's often true that the more you have, the more you want. It's also true that the more you have, the more difficult it is to be happy and satisfied with what you already have. In fact, many people lose sight. They forget what they already have because they're already looking to what they don't have, to what they have to get. And it doesn't help that our whole economic system is based on this. Could you imagine, not just Christians, could you imagine if every American tomorrow said, you know what, I like my house, I like my old car, I like my clothes, I like what I've got, I don't need to get anything else, I don't need that newer, bigger, better, faster, whatever. What would that do to our economy? Grind it to a halt. The only people making money would be the grocers, because we still have to have food. But see, the marketers know that. They understand that if everybody became satisfied with what they have, nobody would buy anything new. And so the commercials tell you, you're missing something. There's a missing piece in your life, and it's what we're offering. And they plan obsolescence in their products. Remember when it used to be you could buy an appliance and it was going to last you 25 or 30 years? Good luck with that now. You're lucky it lasts the length of the warranty, which is in months, not years. And we're always building something bigger or better or faster. Computers, always coming out. Not so much necessarily bigger. Now it seems like the drive is to get them smaller. but they are faster processors and larger drives. You can hold more. And you got to have that new phone and you got to have that new tablet. You got to have the new car with all of the bells and whistles. You got to have new. Because what you have isn't good enough. That's the bottom line. Capitalism, consumerism, largely based on greed. Erwin Lutzer observes, our problem is not that we consume in order to live. We live in order to consume. He goes on to add, consumerism is another kind of hedonism. Now, I had to look that word up. Hedonism means pleasure-seeking or self-indulgence. Advertisers are constantly creating new needs for us. Above all, they insist that we can never be satisfied with what we have, or our penchant for their products would come to an end. The world tells us we must constantly be in a state of dissatisfaction, so that we will want to buy more and increase the variety and intensity of our experiences. The game is to keep fulfillment and satisfaction just beyond our reach. Now, if you think about it, it was really coveting that plunged the human race into sin. Think back to the Garden of Eden. I mean, it was perfect. There was no sin. There was no curse. You couldn't have asked for a better situation. But along comes the serpent, whispering in Eve's ear, you know, God's holding out on you. Oh, you think you've got it good, but you know, you could have it a whole lot better. Why should you be satisfied with serving God? You can be like God. In fact, really what he was saying was you can be your own God. You can set your own rules. You can decide what you want to do. You can have it all. And that was the temptation that led Eve to the first sin, as well as Adam. You say, yeah, but I'd never do that, really. If you read the last few chapters of the book of Revelation, at the end of your Bible, you find out that there's going to be a time coming where Jesus Christ himself is going to rule and reign on this earth for a period the Bible calls 1,000 years. I don't know if that's an actual 1,000-year literal period or not. I don't know. Don't care at this point. It's going to be a long time, though. What we do know about that time is that when Jesus is ruling and reigning, you're going to have a perfect government that is worldwide. Now, that's really hard for us to imagine, especially here in Illinois, but you know, just try to think about that. And there's going to be no war, so there's going to be peace. And whenever you have prolonged peace, you have prosperity. Everybody's needs are going to be met. It's going to be great. It's going to be the closest thing this world has ever seen to the Garden of Eden. But it says at the end of that, oh, one last thing about that 1,000 years, Satan is locked away. Satan's not there to mess anything up like he did in the garden until the very end. He's released from his prison for just a short time, because that's all the time it takes for him to whisper into the unbeliever's ears, you can be your own God. You don't need this King Jesus. He's keeping you back. You should have more. And it says that the numbers are like the sand in the sea, or the seashore, that march against Jesus in order to overthrow him, even though the conditions are great. Why? Because Satan appeals to their greed. It's a part of human nature. So far from a harmless, inconsequential rule, this 10th commandment is a key command. It involves a sin that brings about every other sin. And it really focuses on the first commandment. It's what I'm calling the peril of greed. The first commandment says, you shall have no other gods before me. The first commandment and the 10th commandment are actually the same command. They're like bookends. Because in the New Testament, Paul writes in Colossians 3:5 that greed is idolatry. Because those things we desire become our God. They take His place in our lives. In Ephesians 5:5-7, Paul writes, for you can be sure of this, no immoral, impure, or greedy person, such a man as an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, because of such things God's wrath comes on those who are disobedient. Therefore, do not be partners with them. Greed is not good. Greed is idolatry. Greed replaces God on the throne of our hearts and puts things in its place. John Calvin writes, our heart is an idol factory. We keep coming up with things to replace God in our lives. And our problem is that the world is so much a part of our thinking, it's hard for us to identify worldliness in our lives. Ezekiel the prophet writes in Ezekiel 14:3, of those who set up idols in their hearts. You don't have to build a temple to have an idol. You don't have to have a statue that you bow down and worship to. Anything that comes before God is an idol. And greed feeds that desire. Now, this desire can be controlled. And if we can control the desire, we can prevent a lot of the other sins outwardly from taking place. So I want to finish briefly with the preventative of greed. How can we stop greed from taking root in our hearts? And in a word, it is contentment. Ultimately, the desire to try to obtain what somebody else has, what we don't have, is to be dissatisfied with what God has given us. We're telling God, you haven't done a good enough job. You haven't given me what I need to be happy, so I got to go get it myself. It's really a lack of faith and trust and a lack of appreciation of what God has given to us. But contentment safeguards us from this sin and from many of the other commandments being broken. We have been created to love others and to use things. But greed switches those so that we love things and use others to get the things. We put our priority on what's temporary, not what's eternal. Because people will go on into eternity, but things won't. You'll never see a hearse pull in a U-Haul. You can't take it with you. But greed says, get it now. You got to have it. You can't live without it. The truth is taught in 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 10. Godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And it doesn't even have to be money. You can say things. The love of things is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. What's the opposite of covetousness? Contentment. Being satisfied with what you have. That is contentment, and that keeps us from coveting. Now, this isn't easy, and it's not natural. Paul wrote to the Philippians in chapter 4, verse 12, I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. He had to learn it. Didn't come naturally, and it won't for any of us. We're all sinners. We all are selfish. We all want what we want, and we want it yesterday. It's just part of our nature. But he had to learn the secret. I want to leave you this morning with just a few thoughts on how we can overcome this problem in our lives. First of all, give thanks for what we have. I looked it up this last week. The phrase give thanks appears 34 times in Scripture. The words thanks or thanksgiving appear over 100. That's important. We need to be people with an attitude of gratitude. One of the problems we have in our Western world is this idea that we deserve everything. That's my right. The world owes me. I'll tell you what, the world owes you nothing. We deserve nothing. We deserve God's wrath. That's what we deserve. People talk to me about life not being fair, and I just want to say, you better thank God life's not fair, because if it was fair, you wouldn't be here, and neither would I. But this idea of entitlement, that the world owes me, is exactly opposite of what the Bible teaches. We need to be thankful. Coveting takes our focus away from what God has given us and onto what we don't have. But when we start giving thanks, our eyes go back to what we have, and that's where the focus should be. Secondly, be wise in how we use what we have. God calls us to responsibly manage what He has given to us. We are to be stewards of all that God gives us. Use them. Use them well. Understand that nothing really belongs to us. God loans it to us for a while. Because when He calls us home to be with Him, we're going to leave it all behind. So nothing is truly ours. Third, focus on relationships over possessions. Proverbs 15 sums this up well. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Better a meal of vegetables where there is love than a fattened calf with hatred. Relationships, loving God, loving others, takes precedence over stuff, over things. We need to get that priority straight once again. And then finally, be a giver, not just a getter. Maybe the best antidote for coveting there is to be generous with what we have. Instead of amassing things, learn to give them away. Jesus talked a great deal about giving. Why? Because that's the preventative to materialism, to greed. It's a cure for covetousness. Jesus' words are recorded in Acts 20, verse 35. It is more blessed to give than to receive. And as C.S. Lewis wrote, biblical charity is more than merely giving away that which we can afford to do without anyway. When we just give away stuff that we would throw away, but, oh, well, just give it to the Salvation Army or whoever, that's not really giving. Giving is something that should be meaningful to us. And that will help us avoid the traps of greed. Let's live simply so that others can simply live and learn again the gift of giving. This prohibition of covetousness speaks loudly against the consumerism and the materialism that has engulfed our culture. Jesus told us to beware of covetousness. Paul pointed us instead to a life of contentment, simplicity, and generosity. Remember when these Ten Commandments were given? The Israelites hadn't reached home yet. They were still wandering in the wilderness. And we're like them. We're not home yet. This is not our home. The things we have are not the things we're going to enjoy forever. So maybe it'd be a good idea to travel light. To be more concerned about our relationships than our possessions. To be content and thankful for what we have. I think it would change our lives. As we close this morning, I'd like you to turn to a hymn we often sing for communion time, but I think it would be fitting to close our service today. 413, when I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss and pour contempt on all my pride. Forbid it, Lord, that I should boast, save in the death of Christ my God. All the vain things that charm me most, I sacrifice them to his blood. We're going to sing those first two verses. I'm going to invite you to stand as we sing. And I pray that this is your prayer, that things will fade back into their proper perspective when we survey the wondrous cross.